Well, good afternoon. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. Our topic today is the Anchorage International Film Festival. You may have heard it talked up a little bit on Talk of Alaska last week. We're taking a really different tack today. We're going to invite some of the filmmakers to actually call in and talk to us about the films they're making. And that's what we're hoping to do in the first half hour. And in the second half hour, we're going to be talking to a couple of the workshop leaders. So we hope that listening to our program today, you'll get a feel for this festival and a feel for maybe what some of what you want to go out and see. It's a big festival. I have Donnell Smith with me in the studio today. She's the general manager for the Anchorage International Film Festival. We'll get some overviews from her. But first, I want to let you know how to participate. You can call in at 550-8433 in Anchorage. Or if you're calling from around the state, it's 1-888-353-5752. Or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. I want you to know about our website because we have put some things that are useful to you there. We have the film festivals link. We've got their Facebook link, which I think is a pretty lively place to stay on top of the film festival news. We've also put some of the trailers up for some of the programs. Maybe some of the filmmakers we'll hear from today. So you can kind of go there and get a quick taste. You can also go to the film festival site, which is enormous and navigable. I found that I could get around on it and find out lots of information. But you can just go to kska.org, or you can go to Facebook, Google, or just use Anchorage International Film Festival. You can get to those sites. But just explore it. It's worth exploring. You'll feel like, I think you'll feel hooked, basically. Let's see. I also want to let you know that this program will air again tonight at 7, but you can't call in then. You can only call in now. And also need to let you know that the Anchorage International Film Festival is a nonprofit client of KSKA. Didn't know that. All right. So, Donnell, I just wanted to sort of give folks just a bit of an overview. This is your first year as a general manager?
Yeah, more or less, yes.
You were probably a volunteer before, right?
Yes, I was employed part-time as well last year in sort of the same role. It's just an every-person role. Yeah. Do everything. Yeah.
Well, it's a scary title, frankly.
Because, yeah. I didn't choose it.
It sounds like whatever they want you to do, you do. So
yeah, whatever has to be done. Yeah.
Yeah. So I read the guide that's out now, which is really helpful. There was, I think, Teresa Scott had an explanation that sort of told us how back in time people have been working on this thing. How long have you been working on it?
Well, you know, my first involvement would have been when I was a reporter of the Daily News, and I would just go watch the movies and write little
mini
reviews or do some previews or talk to the founder, Tony Shepard, about the festival before it happened. And then about 3 years ago, I got involved more just, you know, organizing media, things like that. And then last year, just taking on some more responsibilities because, you know, as you said, it's a volunteer effort. And the board, they're all volunteers with full-time jobs. So there was a realization a lot of stuff had to be done. It would be really helpful to have someone paid who was able to spend a little more time doing it. So that's what I'm doing this year.
It sounds like it's evolutionary. You know, I feel now that it'll be around even longer because it's got some paid people working for it. Maybe, you know, this is the 10th year. That's good to tell people. I don't know. I did the math in the book, and I heard talk of it being a little smaller than it used to be, but really, there's so much to go see. There's, 14 days? There's, I don't know, 20 feature films, 30 documentaries. I mean, there's just so much to go see.
There is, and we're pretty excited about it. Tony is the feature. I haven't actually seen, unfortunately, general manager doesn't get to see the films.
Oh.
Because I'm doing everything else, but I hear about them. And Tony is the not only the founder, he's also the lead feature programmer. And he's really excited about the features this year. The other programmers are excited about their programs. And I think overall, everybody who's been involved for a long time, and I would say there's, hundreds of people in this town that have been involved since the inception of the festival 10 years ago, and some are still involved. And I would say this festival, you know, it's just overall just really strong. Tony says it's one of the best overall feature programs he's had.
This year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's great, because he's seen a lot and done a lot.
He has seen a lot. Yes, he has.
And if he's excited about this year, then I'm excited. Also, I wanted to tell people your venues are a little different. You're focusing on two venues this year, right?
Yeah, we're trying to tighten things up, make it a little easier for us and all our volunteers to basically handle the number of people coming in. and picking venues that really work for us, the Beartooth, which is our main principal venue, and then out north, which already has a pretty active film fan base because they run Manhattan Shorts, Luna Fest, other films throughout the year. And then out north, we're actually also converting one of the main galleries into a small theater so that we have actually two theaters running there.
At Out North? Oh, yeah. Okay. Where their art gallery usually is.
Yes.
That's going to be films.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, but there's other venues. Like when I looked through, you know, there's like six events you can go to that are fun social events. And
right.
One of them's at the Alaska Dispatch Hangar, which
yes.
sounds pretty fun. Another one's at Mad Myrna. The museum is part of this, right?
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
But primarily, your films are going to be at those two venues.
Those two venues and these other special events you're talking about, it's really about we want to spread where we're at, the people we're reaching, and also we're excited about the 10th year. And we're really excited about the partners we have, like you just mentioned, the Pop 11 art project run by the International Gallery. Of course, the museum and Rasmussen Foundation are bringing up a filmmaker and some free screenings at the museum.
We're going to talk about that later. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Before we go to, we've got some filmmakers calling in, so we want to go to them and let them tell us what's going on with them and why they made their films and what they're about. But just tell me a little bit about tickets. Are tickets still available? Where do you go to get them? You can get them for single screenings or you can buy a big fat pass.
Right. Thanks for asking that because we did change some things. There are advanced ticket sales for all the venues. But at the Beartooth, you have to buy them at the Beartooth, and you can do that now for all the films running through the festival, except for the films in Best of the Fest, which we don't know which films are going to be in Best of the Fest yet. And at Out North and at the other venues, you can order them in advance online. There are all festival passes. We got two of them, and you can also buy those at the Beartooth.
One lets you into everything, and one lets you into
everything except for the opening night gala and the award ceremony.
Okay. All right. So we may get questions about tickets, so keep that in your forefront. I think I told you that we wanted to focus on the Sundance program, listeners, and we invited some of the filmmakers who have films in that program to call in and talk to us about them. So those are films by Alaskans or about Alaska, right?
That's correct.
And I had the program here. There's Snow Dance 1 and Snow Dance 2, and there's roughly 11 films, something like that.
Yeah, I think there's a few more than that. But yeah, there's two main programs, and then some of the Snow Dance films are also in their own screenings.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And that's in the printed book if you get it, and I'm sure you can find it on the website.
Absolutely.
I would like to go to Phil.
Hey,
hi, Phil. You're on Hometown Alaska. Welcome, and thank you for calling in. We really appreciate it. You were involved in one of the Snow Dance films, Portrait of Nikolai. Am I right?
Yes, I was.
And why don't you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, the actual making of it started off with people from Athenium School in Anchorage and the makers of Media.
And so they were behind the project. And what is A Portrait of Nikolai about?
Basically, it's about the town and the people bringing the culture in with and mixing it with modern life. Just life outside the village, but bringing that in
mm-hmm.
and really trying to capture it.
Did you actually operate a camera?
Yeah, everybody did. That was involved with it. We got to use cameras, still photos.
What kinds of things did you shoot? Were you doing interviews, or what kinds of things were you shooting?
We got out and we interviewed kids from our town. We interviewed elders.
And was there a big disparity between what the kids had to say and what the elders had to say?
You know, you actually got to see a different side of some people when you did the interviews. So there was a lot of people on board with it, and they respected the idea of it.
Interesting. So you heard some surprising things then when they were on camera?
Yeah. Oh, like, a different side of some people came out.
Can you give us an example?
Well, there was one lady. She was really happy to see that our town was you know, still alive, and we got these opportunities and people coming out to the villages and wanting to work with the kids and the townspeople.
Right. You know, how big is Nikolai? People won't, in Anchorage, might not know how many people live there. Were you born there?
No, I was born in Anchorage, but I've lived here my whole life. There's only about 95 people here.
Uh-huh. And how big is your school?
There's 20 kids in my school, but that's preschool through 12.
You must have needed everybody for the film crew, right?
Yeah.
Did this whet your appetite for filmmaking, Phil?
What was that?
Did this whet your appetite, make you curious or interested in making film?
Definitely. Like, we didn't really know what was going to happen at first, but I think all of us, like, it was really more than we were expecting.
I see. And the first time you've ever done it, so it's a big, big new experience for you.
Yeah.
Would you say there's any one thing you take away from it? And actually, has your village seen the film yet, and have they reacted to it?
Yeah, actually, they got the editing done here, and on the last day, we had a potlatch with Heather, Hannah, and Marie Aikman, the media crew that came out.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed the video.
What was the reaction?
People were in awe about it. Like, I don't think they were really surprised how good it came out.
Uh-huh. Because first time.
Yeah.
Now, I understand you have another filmmaker with you there, Sean.
Yep.
And you can put Sean on for a moment.
All right, here he is.
Thanks so much, Phil.
Hello.
Hi, Sean.
Hi,
Thank you so much for calling in.
No problem. Glad to be here.
And so what your role was as a filmmaker also?
Yeah, we split up to different groups, and we all tackled pretty much all the landscaping.
What would that be? I mean, obviously you did elders, it sounds like, from what you talked about. You did young people and their attitudes. What else did you cover?
We covered, we didn't go with them, but it was PJ and Derek that took them upriver to go shoot at Old Nikolai. So we got, like, our old history where we used to live and now how we got here.
Very cool.
So I think we pretty much covered, like, most of it.
And I know we talked a little bit about the village reaction to the film. Is there more of a sense of closeness with people now that they've shared their stories this way? Especially
yeah,
with
I think so. It's because most people don't usually stay inside, usually. So, like, when we go out and visit them and record them, you know, the interviews, I think we did get closer in our history.
That's great. Well, one last question for you, Sean. What was your favorite part of this project?
My favorite part was dividing into groups and pretty much tackling what we wanted to record and film.
So you started from blank slate and then had to figure it out?
Yeah.
Do you have another movie in mind?
Not right now, but I probably want to think about one.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Donnell. Do you have any questions for Sean?
I do not, but I do want to say that their film plays on Sunday at the Beartooth at 3 p.m.
That's great. I think it might show another place, too.
It does. It also shows, let me look here.
Saturday, December 11th at the Wilda Marston.
Right.
At 3:15. So.
And that's in the free family programming at the library.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, Sean and Phil, thank you so much for calling in from Nikolai. We really appreciate it. And congratulations on getting your first film done.
Thank you.
All right. Well, okay. Bye-bye. We have lots of filmmakers calling in, so I guess we're going to move on quickly. I'm going to talk to Jack Dalton, who's in one of the Snow Dance. Sorry about that. Films. Are you there, Jack?
Yeah, this is Jack.
Well, welcome to Hometown Alaska. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the movie? You didn't make it, but you're kind of the main subject of it, right?
Well, not really the subject. I was the, I guess you call it, the star of the movie. It's called Native Time, mm-hmm. and it takes a look at the differences, the way Western, Western culture and Native culture look at the passage of time.
Interesting, which very different ways, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it started, Sean Morris, I'm not sure if he's on yet, but Sean Morris, who's the director, had done a film called Kusaha Kwan back in the early 2000s, and when he brought it up here, he was saying how he had this time-lapse attachment for his camera, and he really wanted to do something with, you know, fast motion and slow motion, and I laughed and said, huh, that sounds like Native Time. And 8 years later, we did it, and we made this little 10-minute film, which was a lot of fun.
That's a great story. I know it involves a crosswalk, but I know we also don't want to give away anything. So it's basically you're going to leave it at the discrepancies between people's views of time.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a great way to put it. It does have kind of a twist along the way in terms of this traditional hunter coming in contact with Western civilization and it premiered in Los Angeles at a film festival down there that it got a good reception, but we also showed it at AFN up in Fairbanks this year, and it was a huge, huge rousing success for that, and that was a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. It's only 11 minutes, I think, right? It's a short one.
9 minutes and 30 seconds and that includes the end credit.
Okay. Any parting words from your experience of being in that?
We took up the crosswalk at O'Malley and Birch up on the hillside for 4 days, and a lot of people were driving by really curious about that, and hopefully some of them are listening now and know that we're going to be at the film festival, and hopefully some of them will drop by and say, yeah, I remember driving past you while you were at O'Malley and Birch.
That's great. Come in and find out what was going on at O'Malley and Birch. That's great. All right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in, Jack. I appreciate it. I think we're going to get a chance to talk to Sean briefly here, but we're going to go next to a filmmaker calling in from Sitka. So goodbye, Jack.
Thank you. Goodbye. Hope to see everyone there.
All righty. All right. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Kathleen. How you doing?
Just great. Thanks for calling in, taking the time. Why don't you tell folks what your film is about?
We helped produce the Rain Power film, and we co-produced it with the city of Sitka, and it was made by filmmaker Hannah Guggenheim. It's basically about the work that Sitka's doing to develop a fully renewable energy supply in Sitka, and how we're developing salmon-friendly hydro projects here and doing it that way.
So it's kind of unusual for a filmmaker and an organization like a conservation organization to get together. How did that happen?
Well, we've been working closely with the city here for about 5 years now on renewable energy. The city of Sitka set some pretty ambitious goals on reducing carbon emissions, and it set very ambitious goals for powering most of our community with renewable energy and renewable electricity. So the relationship that we've had, we've been working together for a long time, and we decided to do a film because we thought other people should know what we're working on, and we really want to have statewide and national policy that supports the efforts we're doing here, and we thought a film might be a way to help more people know about that and be a way to help catalyze some policy that would support what we're doing.
So what kind of reaction have you had to the film? Is it living up to your hopes? Are people getting inspired? Is it getting aired or screened a lot of different places?
We premiered the film at Southeast Conference, which is coalition of groups in Southeast Alaska, municipalities and businesses and nonprofits and lobbying groups. And one of the reasons we showed it there is just because for so long in Southeast Alaska, there's been a lot of conflict over what kind of development occurs and how to balance development and conservation. And we showed that movie there just to show the rest of the people in Southeast Alaska that you can find a balance between the two. And I think that the audience there at Southeast Conference went away really inspired and said, you know, we need to try to figure out how to do this in our own towns, because it's going to make a lot more sense if we figure out how we can do things without conflict on the front end than fighting over everything on the tail end and holding up what we need to make happen.
So a film with a message, a documentary.
Yes.
From Sitka. And that airs, I see, Saturday, December 11th at 2:45 at the Beartooth.
That's right.
And is the filmmaker coming up? Do you know?
No, Hannah Guggenheim was the filmmaker, and she's up in Sitka for the summer. She's from San Francisco, and she won't be able to make it up for it.
Are any of you guys coming up?
Nope. None of us are going to be able to make it up there. We're staying in Sitka.
This was our one chance to have you, huh?
Yeah, heck yeah.
All right. Well, any other questions for Andrew? Okay, Andrew, I look forward to seeing your film. It's kind of refreshing to see something that's about solutions instead of just problems.
Yeah, that was the real intent from it. We had the Wild and Scenic Film Festival come to Sitka, and they had some great films, but, you know, it seems like too many environmental films are. There's a huge, overwhelming problem that we got to figure out how to deal with, and, you know, especially out of the electric department, they wanted to say, we're finding solutions. We need to tell people that and get them inspired about finding ways to move forward. So we hope everybody who watches it comes up with their own ideas and helps everybody find solutions.
Well, thanks for that. Thanks for taking the time to call in, Andrew, and I look forward to seeing your film Saturday, December 11th at 2:45 at the Beartooth.
Great. Enjoy. Take care.
All right. Take care. We're going to switch gears just a little bit. We've got another filmmaker on. Donnell, you encouraged us to get this fellow. He's actually an actor in the film The Beekeepers. Hello, John.
Hello, Ms. McCoy. Thanks for having me on the local NPR affiliate. I'm very happy to be here.
So tell us about The Beekeepers, and what did you do in The Beekeepers?
Okay, well, you know, whenever someone associated with this film is asked about, you know, that very question, what's this film about, they kind of cringe because the plot's kind of preposterous. And it's really a character-driven movie, but I'll take a shot at it. This movie is an independent feature length, 152 minutes in length, college comedy, shot in HD, shot right here in Anchorage, that follows a group of students from Statham County University, and it pretty much chronicles their summer adventure. And kind of what they do in their summer adventure is they try Gary, Mike, and Barrett, who are collectively known as the Beekeepers, try basically embark on a quest to save a comatose companion who is in a coma, and they're trying to basically save him and try to maybe raise enough money to basically get an experimental surgery for this individual.
So is there a redemption here? Or you said it's a comedy, but they sound, I think I saw them described as slackers. I mean, is there some redemption for them here?
Yes, at the very end. I don't want to go really into spoiler territory.
Okay.
But they do get into a bet with a local YouTube celebrity that for basically to get the money for the experimental surgery. And, you know, in their own way, they do come out on top. I'm not going to tell you exactly how they come out on top, but there is a sweet sense of redemption at the end of this film. And, you know, in the tradition of Clerks, Knocked Up, and Superbad, you know, this film brings a new kind of a perspective on the aging slacker and their place in the universe.
And are you one of the three slackers?
Yes, ma'am. I play the role of Barrett Meeks, and I'm kind of the mastermind behind the whole bet here and the whole and what ends up being the plot of the movie.
Ah, so I think I saw from your email that you were calling in from work. So you took a break from your job to call in and tell us. Thank you.
Yes, I took a 45-minute lunch instead of an hour lunch. Isn't that great?
It's lucky for us. So your film is The Beekeepers is going to air Saturday, December 11th. Am I right about that, Donnell?
That's correct.
At 10:20 p.m., a late night showing at the Beartooth.
With a Q&A to follow, I may add.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Can I ask him one question?
Sure, jump in.
I like the idea of having mastermind and slacker in the same description of a character, but I know that there's a scene in Bosco's. Can you name some other kind of Anchorage locales people might be familiar with where there's some key scenes?
Yes, yes, we did shoot in Bosco's Cards, Comics, and Games, located on 2606 Spinard Road, Bosco's.com. They are a sponsor of this screening. UAA was a heavily, this was a college comedy, and through the help of the University Media Group, headed by, I think, a few, I know Woodruff Laputka is a prominent member of that group.
Oh, I've met Woodruff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we've kind of had access to a lot of the campus, so the campus was a place that was shot, that we did quite a bit of shooting. Other people's houses that we knew for indoor shots that required a house, we kind of used just a bunch of houses around the community and stuff, and there was quite a bit of scenery. And this film was shot kind of in Anytown, USA, but you can tell that it's not just any place in America by the mountains in the background. So definitely has a Pacific Northwest feel.
Well, John, thanks so much for calling in, and we want to make sure you get your lunch. So go ahead and go back and eat your lunch, and we'll look forward to seeing your film here.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Ms. McCoy and Ms. Smith. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's really fun. So thanks a lot. Bye-bye,
yes,
John.
Thank you. Bye.
And we just want to give, we're going to take a break here in a few minutes, but I want to let John Morris talk to us. Hi, Sean.
Hi.
Thank you. You've been holding and waiting to get on. We talked a little bit with Jack Dalton about Native Time. You're the filmmaker.
Yes.
And he told us a story about how you wanted to do something with your slow motion on your camera.
Well, I think that was more, that was the catalyst of the idea, is Jack said, oh, that sounds like Native Time. And I said, what do you mean by that? And he kind of went into, different perceptions and how people can see things differently and these kind of things. I was like, it kind of sounds like a short film. And like Jack said, that was a conversation that we had a number of years ago, and it just kind of came to fruition now.
So how does it feel to see a project actually come to fruition? I bet lots of ideas get started and actually don't ever get finished. So how does it feel to actually see one be in a film festival finished?
Oh, no, it was great. And it's fun, and it's definitely an honor to be screening at the Anchorage International Film Festival. It's just a great thing, and everything that they've done, especially, supporting filmmakers in the community and different things they've put together is great. So, I mean, being there to screen at the festival, especially a hometown festival, is great.
Well, that's great. Your film will be showing Saturday, December 11th at 7:30 at Out North.
That's right. Yeah, and one thing that's interesting, it is a comedy. Like the issues in there, they're a little heavy, and the title and different things and kind of the theme. I think people could think that it's sort of a serious kind of introspective look at different things, but it's a short comedy.
Well, that's great. It's great to know that going in. Did you have something to say, Dada? Yeah, Sean, is it true that there's minimal or no dialogue in the film?
There is no dialogue. Yeah, that's something that we played with early. Originally, we went through a few different ideas, and some ideas we had dialogue in some, and then we kind of decided to focus on letting people sort of come to the conclusion of what the characters are seeing without being told that. So it was our idea is to sort of experience what's going on through the characters' eyes instead of through what they're saying.
Intriguing. Well, I'll be there. I'll be there to see it.
Okay.
So thanks a lot, Sean, for calling. We appreciate it, and thanks for holding on to get on.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
All right. And we have caller Chris. Christopher, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. Thanks.
Now, you're calling from Seward, and do you have a film in Snowdance?
Yeah, it's called Tour de Seward, and it'll be showing with Native Time and some other Snowdance films on Saturday, December 11th at the Out North Theater.
Well, great. Thank you for calling in, because I wasn't able to reach all of the filmmakers, so it's great that you just took the initiative and did it, so thanks. Is this a tour of Seward, really?
Well, sort of. I'm on an ultimate wheel, which is like a unicycle without a seat.
Wow. With a camera?
Oh, no, I have somebody filming me.
Oh, okay. And so what do we get to see?
Well, you'll get to see some pretty gnarly, unicycle riding, as well as a look at my hometown of Seward, Alaska, kind of a look at the historic past, as well as, the progressive future.
Great. Is this your first film?
No, I've made a few, unicycle skateboard films before.
So it's a real active genre. So I can't wait to see you on that
What did you call that device that you're going to be on?
It's called the Ultimate Wheel.
So is it, it's a giant, like a just a single giant wheel without a seat?
It's a 29-inch wheel, just like you would find on a bicycle.
Uh-huh. So like a unicycle. That sounds great. How long is your film?
It's 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. All right. And
you pretty action-packed.
Action-packed. Okay. We'll have white knuckles by the time we're done. Maybe you're going to spawn a whole bunch of people who want to ride cycles like that.
Yeah, I hope so. I would encourage any unicyclists out there to take off their seat and just ride the wheel.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Christopher. I really appreciate it.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
All right. Let's see. I had a couple of questions I wanted. We're going to take a break here shortly, but when we come back in the second half hour, we're going to be talking to Eric Knutson, who's calling in from London. He's a filmmaker, and he is one of the workshop leaders. And we'll also be talking to Charles Burnett, who's been silently sitting here waiting for the second half. So I'm really excited to talk to you, Charles. I've been talking mostly with filmmakers from the Snowdance program. Donnell Smith is here in the studio with me, sort of, you know, throwing out times and tidbits about the festival. So we'll be back at the second half hour. I'm Kathleen McCoy. You're listening to Hometown Alaska.
If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome to Hometown Alaska. This is Kathleen McCoy, your host. We're back. We had a sort of action-packed first half hour where all these filmmakers were calling in from the Anchorage International Film Festival, the Snowdance program. We still didn't even cover all of them. I mean, we think there's, I don't know, maybe 15 films or something like that. We were only able to speak to five or six folks. But thank you guys for calling in. And the second half, we really wanted to take a slightly different tact and focus on some of the workshops and two filmmakers in particular who are teaching at the film festival and also showing their work at the film festival. So welcome, Charles.
Thank you.
he's been with us, but listening to the program. You are an artist in residence for a month in Anchorage, and I told you I was going to say, why did you come in this time of the year? You arrived just in time to experience our fun ice storm. So why did you come now?
Well, I think this was the only time that was available. I'd applied earlier in the summer, but I think everyone else was applying at the same time. So, you know, the only, I think, option was this time.
So you seized it.
And actually I was kind of pleased in one way, because I wanted to experience the sort of like midnight sun, you know, the darkness. And
you're getting it.
I've had enough.
Well, let's tell people about your you have had a long filmmaking career. Yeah. I think it was the New York Times that described you as the best but least known or something like that. Yeah. So you went to film school in UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
You were born in Mississippi, but your family moved
to Los Angeles,
West Coast, yeah. And you ended up going to school. Why did the film bug bite you? And this would have been in the 60s, I think, right?
It was in the 60s. I think what happened was it was during the civil rights period, and everyone was interested in art as a means for social change and using it to, you know, talk about social issues and things like that. And film was sort of foreign. I mean, when I was a kid, I never thought I'd be a filmmaker, though I liked films, you know, things like that. It was only until I got disenchanted with my major and I started looking around, and I was going to the movies a lot, and I said, I can be a cameraman. Let me try that. But I didn't know at the time that it was a closed field, you know. It opened since, but so I took a gamble, and because I was always interested in still photography. And so I went over to USC, but it's quite expensive, and they said, you know, you need to pay your tuition to get in to get a grant. And I couldn't afford that. So I went over to UCLA, which is dirt cheap. It's only like $25 or something like that.
At the time, not now,
but it was a great place to be.
Yeah,
in the 60s.
Yeah. And a welcoming place for you, UCLA?
Oh, it was great. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I went there. You know, I met a lot of wonderful people and students. One of the best things about it was, I think, being in an environment where you had a diverse group of people and they were from all over the world and things like that, you know. And so he gained a lot of experience and a lot of friends and things like that. So he had all these different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped influence your style of filmmaking as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have two films that people can see for free, actually. This is mm-hmm. a coordinated effort with the Anchorage Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Tomorrow Night is the first one. That is Night John?
Is Tomorrow Night the second?
Yeah. Oh, today's December.
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah. Yes, it's Night John. I'll be showing
now,
tomorrow.
Now, I looked it up, but I didn't find too much. There's probably something in the film festival guide that mm-hmm. I didn't. But tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it's based on a young adult novel. I mean, a novel for young adults, Gary Paulson. It's based on material that was taken from a slave narrative. And a person who adopted that, Bill Kane, who's a wonderful writer, he's a very interesting person. He's a Jesuit priest, and I was quite surprised, a number of things, but I'm jumping around. But it's the story is about this young girl who's named Sarni, who is living in the South in the 1830s, and she doesn't know how to read or anything like that. She's a slave, and there's a slave by the name of Night John, who comes, he's sold to this particular farm, and they become friends, but he knows how to read and read and write, and he teaches her how to read and write, and as a consequence, there's a penalty for slaves. But by the way, this word slaves, a friend of mine, when we were working the film, they said, rather than using slaves, don't we say freedom impaired? It was more appropriate.
Freedom impaired.
Yeah.
Huh.
And
yeah.
So anyway, so. He teaches her how to read, and they write these passes for some of the ex-slaves some of the slaves that escape, you know, and the owner, who's played by Bo Bridges, learns about it, and he mutilates Night John, the character Night
Ooh,
John.
Dark.
And then he sells the young girl off, you know.
Mm, dark story.
Yeah. But I was surprised Disney did it the way they did.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they did a version different from your version. Obviously.
No. Disney, I was quite surprised because, you know, Disney is usually associated with like Bambi and things like that, and not hard edge. But this one, they were really trying to reflect what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is quite different than their
right.
other films.
I know you're going to be giving a workshop, mm-hmm. and we're going to talk about another film that is going to be screened of yours. But I would like to welcome Eric Knutson to the program.
Hello.
Hello, Eric. I believe you're
nice
calling.
To meet you, Kathleen.
Yes. Thanks for answering my emails. We now have, you know, basically two workshop leaders and filmmakers who could mm-hmm. talk to us about their work at the Anchorage International Film Festival. And I wanted to bring you on because you had said to me that you were so excited to meet Charles Burnett. Well, you're not exactly meeting him, but at least your voices are mingling yeah. in the same room. But. You're about to get on a plane, I guess, and fly here?
In about 3 hours, I'm heading up for the airport, yes. And actually, unusually, it's snowing here in England. We're gripped in a sort of winter freeze. So this is my preparation for coming to LA.
Wow, it's pretty cold here. It was 6 today, and I can't translate that into centigrade that fast, but it's cold. But anyway, you're going to be teaching a workshop, as is Charles, and I want you each to sort of have some chance to talk about your workshop. Could you tell us a little bit about yours and, you know, what you're aiming at there?
Yes. First of all, Charles, nice to meet you. I mean, you're one of the great American independent filmmakers. So I'm looking forward to meeting you in Alaska. My workshop is called Cinema of Poverty, and really I'm very committed to low budget, micro budget production, and I'm sort of doing a workshop around the idea of poverty actually being a very creative force in filmmaking, both in terms of sort of the monetary aspect of it, but also in terms of, I mean, we live in an age of abundance and complexity, and really it's about how one can use simplicity and poverty as a as a positive creative force in filmmaking. So the workshop will explore those sort of ideas, and I'll be showing some examples from a number of my films to try and illustrate that and trying to encourage some discussion around that topic.
So, Charles, what do you think about that? I mean, it does probably give you freedom. You're not beholden to various people who want the story to be a certain way. But money buys a lot, right?
It buys a lot. And it depends. I mean, it depends on the kind of films that you're making and the level of films you're making. If you're going to make a living, it's a different story in a certain sense, you know. It depends on so many other variables.
You probably make different kinds of films.
Well, yes. Yes. I'm reluctant to say a lot because one of the things is I really appreciate films that are done that way, you know. But at the same time, you know, you can only do it for so long if you want to make a living off of it. Now, I mean, Eric has been very successful at it, you know. But a lot of my friends are suffering badly, you know. They can't find work. And these are professional people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
What about that, Eric?
Yes, I mean, I think Charles is right. I mean, one of the things I think we might have to do, actually, in an age where the proliferation of equipment and facilities for making films is becoming very available, I mean, this idea of making a living out of filmmaking, we might have to question. In the UK alone, for example, if you look at book publishing, there are over 200,000 books published every year. And yet, if you walk into a bookshop, only a small proportion of those authors will actually be making money out of it, will actually be making a living out of it. So the way in which people make money varies increasingly, I think. And I think that's coming into filmmaking as well.
So I've often heard the expression that limitations make you more creative. That seems to be sort of where you're coming from. I mean, how do you choose your topics knowing your budget is tight? And maybe you can talk a little bit about The Silent Accomplice, because that's a film that will be screening at the film festival. It's your work. Is it done in this style?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we made this with a very small team. Even though there are nearly 50 characters in the film, what I think it allowed us to do, I mean, in my case, it allows me to explore, for example, the relationship between documentary and fiction, and the fact that we're able to bring in some documentary working practices and documentary aesthetics into the world of fiction, partly as a consequence, actually, of having less money. And I think as one works with less money, one can then develop a kind of visual aesthetic that takes that into account. So that's how I see it. And the workshop is really about exploring some of those issues, because for many filmmakers, they are not going to make a living out of it, and yet they can also be considered to be quite accomplished artists. So the workshop is really about that, and I suppose my film is an example of that.
I want to let our listeners call in if they would like to talk to either of you, and just let you know the number is in Anchorage 550-8433, or around the state it's 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometownalaska@ksk.org. And actually, we did get an email, and Donnell, this is a question for you. It's a technical question about the film festival. This is someone who is, Carl, submitted a 24-hour, I was part of the 24-hour film competition. We submitted on time. Since then, we haven't heard whose will be shown or where. Can you ask Donnell when it will be announced? And is it the only the top five that will be judged, or how is it going to be done? Would really appreciate knowing. So there's an eager filmmaker for you.
And I'm sorry, what was his name?
Carl.
Carl, I wish I could answer all those questions. I can answer one of them, because the 24-hour film competition is being organized by the organization, the 24-hour film competition. And those films will be screened on Monday, December 6th at 9:30. But I will have to follow up on the organizers of that. We're kind of partnering with them, and then that night we'll announce our own film festival juried film competition called Quick Freeze. So there'll be actually two. That will give people 5 days to make a film. And so let me follow up with that. You can email me at info@anchoragefilmfestival.org, and I will follow up with that and get back to you.
Okay. Well, great. So we have still Eric and Charles on, two filmmakers and workshop leaders. And Charles, I'd love to have you talk a little bit about your workshop that you're going to be giving to folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, mine involves several issues, you might say. I just did a film in Namibia, and it was based on a historical event, you know, the liberation of Southwest Africa. And it tells the story of the people's movement, and it's framed by Samyoma, who was the president and was the leader of SWAPO and things like that. And one of the things that's very difficult is like doing something that's based on fact, a historical thing, particularly something that's recent, and the problems that arise from doing those kinds of films. And the sort of moral dilemmas that you're faced with. Because when you do research in those things, you find that on one level you find, oh, it's you know, you in sympathy with it. Because when I was going to UCLA, that whole thing was going on, you know, in the 60s. And I had sort of a superficial understanding of it. But then when you actually involved in making a film about it, you know, you find that the people you thought were heroes aren't necessarily as such, you know. And the thing is, like, how do you deal with that? With this revelation that war is what it is. It's bad. A lot of innocent people get hurt, and a lot of people you think that were, you know, heroes were not necessarily. But you're getting paid to make this movie. Now, how do you go about doing it? That was one. And the other thing is, I'm coming from America, and I'm dealing with like about seven different cultures all at the same time. You know, in a language I don't know anything about, but having to do a film that's from their perspective as much as possible without me imposing, you know, my sensibilities, American sensibilities on it, you know. And how do you make films that when you go to different cultures and be honest and objective about it? Because one of the filmmakers I really admire is a filmmaker by the name of Joris Evans, who was one of these filmmakers that have been invited all over the world to make films about, you know, people. And so it's about that. It's a whole bunch of, about other things. How to survive in this business, you know.
Yeah, your workshop is about some of that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like that you had a personal tangle in that Namibia story. How did you resolve it? Did you find a way or?
One of the things about filmmaking is all about finding solutions at the moment. You know, and one of the things, there was a particular incident that happened in reality that was very questionable, and we couldn't really go into it, but I knew that people who were very critical of the movement would bring it up, so I had to somehow confront that in the film. And so we did it in a way where it's ambiguous. Mm-hmm. But it's there, you know. You can say, well, we did bring it up, you know. Mm-hmm. But we put it in an atmosphere where it could be like a South African conspiracy or something like that, or something where it has all these possibilities without saying, no, he actually did this particular act, you mm-hmm. know.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking you were, like, when you take people who've been heroes in the popular mind and you have to portray them as not the heroes, but you didn't actually do that, right? You kind of walked a fine line there.
We made it where we made it more or less like a people's movement, you know, and we tried to get those particular things that the person did well in the movie and where he was, you know, heroic and things like that, and the things that where he wasn't. So we brought it up slightly in the background. But we kept him intact as a hero, and he deserved to be.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of these people deserve to be heroes because they did a lot of amazing things in terms of fighting for liberation. You
right.
know?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
what's the name of this film?
It's called Namibia: The Struggle for Liberation.
And so this was something you made recently?
I made it a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. But it's the subject of, you know, wrestling with these issues, at least, is part of what your workshop is about.
Well, yeah, because I tried to do two other films on two political people. And this one particular film I tried to do, the producers wanted to make it a positive image on this particular person, a positive film. And doing the research, you find you can't.
Yeah.
This person did the crime, you know. And so you have to come to some sort of realization that, hey, you're either going to perpetuate this myth or you're going to, you know,
tell the truth.
Tell the truth. Mm. And I couldn't get these people to say, look, just make it ambiguous and I can deal with that. But I can't say he's innocent.
Mm.
You know, and I've done that several times, and the thing I like to say to students sometimes is, don't do too much research into the background of anybody. You'd be a lot safer and a lot better. But then, you know, you're subject to a lot of criticism after. At least you can do the film.
You get the film done. But you don't want to perpetuate myths that aren't true.
You don't want to. But that's one of the things about this business. A lot of people don't care if a person is innocent or guilty. You know?
Mm.
It's like, make a film that says this, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a moral issue a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds tough, actually, to deal with. Like, it might keep you up at night. You might be...
But the thing about worship is, I think you have to learn how to be aware of that. And that's what I like to present, you know, that you will, as a filmmaker, you will come across situations like that where you are asked to do a film and you want to do it, but then you find that I can't do it. You know?
Right, right. Well, you know, we're moving into such an era of partisans. We're getting one side of many stories, you know, and it's harder for people to put all of it together, it feels like. And so it sounds as if that kind of thing affects film. And I think it opens the window for people who want to do some truth-telling, too, you know? Mm-hmm. But you might not get your funding if you... That's the issue, you know? Which is sort of what Eric... Hi, Eric, you're still there, aren't you?
Yes.
A little bit of the independence that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add here, Eric? Or do you have any questions for Charles, since you're so excited to get to meet him?
I'm excited to meet him, too.
No, I mean, this sounds like a very, very interesting project, and I understand exactly the dilemmas that Charles is talking about. And I think these are very real dilemmas for filmmakers. And particularly when you're having to make a living out of it. And you can imagine being caught between having to pay your mortgage and having to do a film that is not quite telling the truth as you see it, you know, and it's a very interesting dilemma for a lot of filmmakers.
Yeah.
I do think that filmmakers are sometimes under incredible pressure when there is quite serious funding involved. You know, of course, those who are investing will want to have some kind of say into the product that is being produced. And that does affect the independence of a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Are there any unusual arrangements where you can get out of that box? One way is to do low-budget films. Are there other ways out of that box? Maybe foundation funding? No, they still have an agenda?
Yes.
I mean, it is complicated, I think. You know, in many ways, there are some filmmakers who have an incredible reputation and who can command, you know, large sums of investment into their films and still maintain their independence. And perhaps that's something they've earned over a number of years. But even, I think, where there's public funding involved, you know, the application process, certainly in the UK, will involve having to satisfy certain criteria and certain expectations. And for some filmmakers, it can be very difficult to negotiate that. You know, some filmmakers are brilliant at making films, but not very good at politics or not very good at articulating themselves in particular kinds of ways that will satisfy funding bodies. But they might be excellent filmmakers, and sometimes that's a very difficult, you know, circle to square.
Right. I just want to remind folks, your film is The Silent Accomplice. And that is airing, screening. Can we give that to folks? Do you know?
Sure. I've got it right here. Eric's film screens at 4 p.m. Wednesday, December 8th at the Beartooth. And again at 1 p.m. Saturday, December 11th at Out North.
And his workshops, do we have that?
Yep.
And his workshop. Both of these workshops.
People can do a weekend of workshops, because Charles' workshop is on December 4th at 12:30 p.m. at Out North. And Eric's is on Sunday, the following Sunday, December 5th at 3 p.m. at Out North.
So great. Well, Eric, thank you. I think it's close to midnight where you are, and so we thank you
much
for calling in. And I understand you're going to be here for about 2 weeks, right?
No, just over a week.
Oh, well, we're glad to get you, and bring your warm coat and your goulashes or your warm boots, and we'll see you in about a day or so, I guess.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Thank you so much for calling in. I want to go to Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
I'm thankful that you're calling in. You're not with the Anchorage International Film Festival. You're with another film festival, and I really wanted to give this film-friendly audience a chance to hear about your film festival. So could you give us some of those details?
Sure. The Alaska Native Heritage Center for the last 6 years has been producing an Indigenous film festival that has taken place at the Heritage Center. This is going to be our seventh year. It's called the Indigenous World Film Festival, and the dates are February 18th and 19th. Friday the 18th, we open the festival with a Meet the Filmmakers reception, and it's free and open to the public, free food, and we get to screen a number of films that evening, and I get to introduce all of the guests filmmakers that are come up. We usually invite between 5 to 7 filmmakers from around the country. The films are all Indigenous-based, Native American, as far as Lower 48 Natives, Alaska Native, Native Hawaiian, Maori, Aboriginal films from Australia, Canadian, First Nations films. We've also had films from Greenland, and Sami films from Norway as well. So it's about Indigenous people around the world, and the films have to have an Indigenous connection through either direction or production or talent or something that focuses on an Indigenous topic or issue. And we screen the films starting about 7 p.m. on Friday, and go till probably about 11 or 11:30 that evening, and then all day on Saturday, starting at 10 a.m., going till probably about 11 or 11:30 p.m., depending on the number of films and the time of
Steve, we're short on time, so I just want to let people know where they can read more about it. Is it going to be on the on your website?
Yeah, it will be posted on the website shortly after the holidays. With a film schedule and all the information on what films will be screened and what filmmakers will be here.
Is there a youth part of this? I saw something on your website of maybe a December 10th deadline for young filmmakers. Is that the same festival?
Yeah, it's connected to the festival. It's produced by our after school high school program, and it's on Thursday the 17th, and it's an opportunity for students, student filmmakers, to get their films out, and it's totally run and managed.
Steve, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling, and I really appreciate it. And thank you, Charles Burnett. Thanks, Donnell.
Thank you.
Thanks, all the callers. And I'd like to let you know that next week, Tika Ballas is going to host Hometown Alaska with Anchorage's singer-songwriter Marion Call. And so that's going to be a great program. So see you next week, and have a good day. Bye-bye.
Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.